The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Friday in Sin City, and you are watching the weekend preview edition of Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, the professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to talk about how even being in the pole position on the information superhighway can have you end up in a wreck. Where some people see magic, we only see a bag of tricks. And just when you think you've got your database all laid out and ready to go once and for all, we're going to tell you that elevation is indeed a statistic.
So, Malinsky, it's a Friday morning, tons of action last night, although we didn't have a football game for the first time on a Thursday. I believe it was since, like, July, maybe the first week of August. It felt all night last night, it felt like something was missing. But I'm sure you bring something to the table. What's your first take on a Friday morning?
Watching a lot of football, actually. And it's fun in a perverse way. As we talked about way back when the Sandusky things broke at Penn State, I'm a Penn State alum. You know, love the university, spent some of the best years of my life there. And just when you think it couldn't get any worse, there's a lot of real fun going on behind the scenes right now. Now, we're going to touch upon this in our Insider Six-Pack later on today's show. But just when they think they may have finally got a coach that can step in and take over the program, some little plot twists at the end, plot twists that are set up in a way that it cannot possibly have a good ending, one way or another. We're going to save that for a little bit later, but following the bouncing ball over the last 24 hours or so with the news coming out of State College, actually, it's been some pretty good entertainment. Okay, Teddy, you didn't watch football last night. What did you do?
I watched basketball. What else are you going to do when there's no football on TV? And we saw something last night, and we're going to see this over and over again throughout the course of both the college basketball and the NBA season. We saw late-breaking injury or suspension information send lines fluctuating wildly. We saw it with Arizona State in college basketball when they announced that they were suspending three players, including their leading scorer and their top reserve off the bench. All the money came on USC. All the money lost. Arizona State with the outright win. We saw it with the Miami Heat and Atlanta Hawks. Great game. Triple overtime thriller. Miami playing not only without D. Wade, but LeBron James. And what happened? They stepped up. They stepped up in the face of adversity. They hit a big shot down the stretch of regulation. And lo and behold, Heat backers take the money, even though all the money in that game largely came on the Atlanta side because of those injuries that factored into the mix. And I want to kind of merge first take with Market Watch today, Dave, because we're going to see this happen again and again and again throughout the course of the season, where the markets are going to react very quickly and very significantly to a lot of injuries that sometimes don't really matter at all.
What you want to be able to do, of course, is be positioned in the right place to get that information as it's breaking. And that's something we're going to help you with every day on this show. We spend our lives looking to be the first in line when this comes across. But when you're the first in line, you also want to know what the information is really worth and never extend yourself too far. A couple of things happen when these situations come into play. First, of course, when players are out for a team, others are in. Guys who don't get to play a lot get a chance to step in. And often, the very first game, they play harder. There's a little bit of adrenaline when you finally get your chance. But even more in these scenarios, what happens in the game results, the opposition struggles. One, there's a natural letdown. Okay, you're an Atlanta player. You're all primed to play the Heat. And then you hear a little bit before the game, no LeBron, no D-Wade. Are you going to be just as pumped? No, you have that natural tendency to let down thinking, oh, those guys are out. This is going to be an easier game for us. You lose a little bit of your edge. That's part one. But now here comes part two. How do you prepare when at the last minute the lineup changes. So if you're Atlanta, how do you prepare for Miami when you're not even sure what the rotations are going to be? If you're Southern Cal last night, how do you prepare for Arizona State where you don't even know what their lineup is going to be when you see those three guys? The three guys you've been preparing for all week, you've been watching films of them. So it's not as automatic as it looks when these scenarios fall into place.
No question about that, Dave. And really, we see it happen again and again, and there's so many different little nuances here to talk about. Obviously, with both of the games we're talking about last night, the Arizona State game and the Miami Heat game, we're talking about one-game absence, or the first game where they're without these key players. And in that first game, as you mentioned, you'll always, not always, almost always, oftentimes see, there's no always in sports betting, they'll oftentimes see the remaining players on that team step up, because everyone's got a chance to contribute. Everyone's getting more playing time than they normally do. And particularly at the NBA level, even the last guy on the bench, guess what? That guy can ball, you know. And when given playing time and opportunities, that guy can put up points and defend and, you know, do all kinds of crazy stuff. So you will consistently see that. But on the other hand, today, what do we have? We had the Nuggets and the Hornets. The Hornets just lost Eric Gordon. He's going to be out for a couple of weeks. Huge impact injury. Questions about the Nuggets and Nene. Nene is meaningless to Denver. Denver has a rotation that goes 13 deep. He didn't play the other night. They won by, what, 26 or 27 at home against Sacramento. Not an impact injury if Nene is out. Shouldn't affect the point spread, but he's a starter. The books are going to keep the game off the board and decide. And we'll see money. We actually saw money come on Sacramento the other night late because Nene wasn't going to play. Not an impact injury. And yet you'll see Carlos Delfino's my prime example. No, he doesn't start for Milwaukee, or sometimes he starts, sometimes he comes off the bench. Carlos Delfino was hurt for a month last year. The Bucks were a terrible team when he was out, noticeably different. His energy, his defensive mindset, his perimeter shooting, and the market, they couldn't care less. Ah, some reserve shooting guard for Milwaukee's out, and no big deal. Those are often the biggest injuries. The ones that the markets don't notice, but it's the glue guys that are missing. And again, we're talking about a one-game scenario last night. But, Dave, as these injuries progress and as the situations get a little bit staler in the betting markets, do we still see an underreaction or overreaction?
We will, and that's something we'll talk about each day on the show from now to the end of basketball season. So what do you do when you're in the loop on these? When you get the information first, you know, as always, there are two ways to win. You beat the game, or you beat the market. If you beat the market, you don't have to beat the game. If you're laying two and you get a chance later to take four, take four and a half, you do that. And by beating the market, you've positioned yourself well. So you do step in these situations if you think you're ahead of the game on it. So chart your line movements accordingly. When this happens, we'll try to position ourselves a little bit. If we know that it's big information that's going to move the line later, we might play a little bit more at the start, knowing that we're going to buy some of that back later at the adjusted price. But don't go overboard. And part two, if you're not first in line, no matter how good that information sounds, you know, if the team was a two-point favorite, key players are out, now the line has moved a couple of points. No matter how good it sounds, once that line has taken the hit, you're a little bit late to the party. You just sit, wait it out. There'll be another party coming up the next day.
Hey, and we've been getting great questions from you guys all week. Please keep those emails coming in. The address, sportsday@covers.com. We have a loaded show today, so we're not going to have time for emails on today's show, but we will get to the backlog early next week. Again, sportsday@covers.com. You can follow us on Twitter every day, @VegasSportsDay. That's one word. And, of course, get involved in the community. What are you waiting for? Active threads and discussions going right now, covers.com/postingforum.
When we come back, we say farewell to Paul Westfall in our Insider Six-Pack, but are we saying welcome to Bill O'Brien? We'll let you know when we come back. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action. From the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Oh, hello there. My name is Brandon Gooch-Hahn, host of Awkward Silence 2.1. And when I'm not living vicariously through Chris Phillips, I'm on VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Yeah, let's pop that top on today's Insider Six Pack. We're going to start with Andy Dalton and the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, Dalton looked fine for Cincinnati in practice yesterday after having to sit out Wednesday because of the flu. Some books took the line down while this was going on. A lot of money came in on Houston while this was going down with Dalton. But from all indications, he's feeling fine and will be able to go in tomorrow's NFL playoff opener. Here's Dalton's own take, quote, "I feel great. It was a tough day yesterday, but I feel a lot better than I did. It was just a one-day thing. It was kind of out of nowhere." The head coach, Marvin Lewis, does not feel the downtime will have hurt all that much since Dalton has already faced this Houston defense just barely over a month ago. This will be a second look at the Texans' defensive sets. Also being given a clean bill of health, I should say, defensive end Carlos Dunlap for the Bengals. This guy is an impact player, no question about it. He's been banged up, but looks like he's going to be able to go after the hamstring injury that has kept him limited or sidelined in recent weeks. Has been ruled just fine. And he's going to be in this week. He was out the first time those two teams met, again, just a little over a month ago.
It's been awfully interesting watching developments in State College, Pennsylvania, the last 24 hours, as we alluded to in our first take. Bill O'Brien, currently the New England offensive coordinator, came in to interview yesterday. They felt that the interview went so well, they asked him to stay over, and they want to make an announcement on Saturday that he'll be the new head coach. Bothers a lot of people because, you know, O'Brien's resume is awfully, awfully thin, and we've seen this before. Charlie Weiss, McDaniel, now O'Brien. Haven't people figured out yet that Tom Brady's just pretty good? You know, it's not the offensive coordinators that have made New England tick. O'Brien, a very thin resume. But it bothers some people in particular a whole lot more. Penn State has what they call the Penn State Football Letterman's Association. It's a group of former players at times have been like an advisory board to the program. They've been sort of kept out of the loop on this. New athletic director Dave Joyner trying to create a clean split between the old guard and the new, thinking this is the best way for the school to go forward in the post-Paterno era. Now here's where it gets a little bit dicey. A couple of guys from that board, we know Brandon Short and DJ Dozier, two former players who are making the trip. There's one other player with them we haven't been able to identify yet. They're actually meeting with Joyner as we speak, apparently in an attempt to block the hiring of O'Brien. I hear some comments from Short that I think really get to the crux of the matter on this. There is a tangible standard at Penn State that this poor guy knows nothing about. I feel badly for him because he is clueless and will not have the support of the majority of the Letterman. Letterman, again, referring to the association. This is a hornet's nest. It's unfortunate that Coach O'Brien has not been aware of the implications of him being in this position. I don't envy him at all. He doesn't have support of the vast majority of former Penn State players, and the vast majority of the student body and the faculty won't support him. That's a little bit strong. Now, before sitting down with Joyner, here's also what Short had to say about the new athletic director. Arrogant, nonchalant, and egotistical attitude by anyone who approached him. It shows he wasn't concerned about getting our point of view. Dave Joyner is not qualified to be the athletic director. There's going to be a whole lot of fun over the next 24 hours. Will they block the O'Brien hiring? And if there is a hiring of O'Brien tomorrow, could it make a bad situation even worse if he's not going to get the full support of the former players behind him?
Yeah, that's good dirt, Dave, coming up with the gossip on Penn State. Love it. Let's talk about the Sacramento Kings and Paul Westphal. We talked earlier in the week about some of the simmering issues that were coming to a boil. Obviously, DeMarcus Cousins with another altercation with the coaching staff. Cousins was suspended for a game last week. And there were other behind-the-scenes issues in Sacramento that ended up resulting in the firing of Paul Westphal yesterday. Westphal had gone 51-120 as the Sacramento Kings head coach. Not exactly a track record that merited his being kept on the job, of course, but given the Maloof's financial state, both here in Las Vegas with the Palms Casino and in Sacramento, didn't know if they could afford to pay two coaches for the upcoming campaign. But Sacramento instead making the move now to Keith Smart. Here's a quote from General Manager Jeff Petry. Quote, when you start seeing the same things over and over again, you can't sit around and mediate forever. How are you going to approach them and try to change them? Now, Keith Smart signed a two-year contract, but only the remainder of the season is guaranteed. Smart coached Golden State to a 36-46 record last year. That was an improvement of 10 games over the previous season, and they fired him at the end of the campaign anyway, moving his position to Mark Jackson, who is going to get them a little bit more TV time.
It's been an unusual start to the NBA season, and here's a little bit of a twist that shows you how unique it's been. New Jersey practiced yesterday. Might not sound like a big deal, lousy team, they opened 1-6. It's the first practice they've had since the season started. That's how awkward that opening salvo of the schedule has been. The one plus for them, Deron Williams and Chris Humphries were at that practice. Now, it wasn't on their own court. It was in Toronto. On the Raptors court, we'll take you to a quote there from Avery Johnson that gets you to the crux of the matter when you see why some of these struggling teams have just been so horrible. We needed it in the worst way. You can only watch so much film and talk about it. You can do it in a shoot-around, but you need bodies moving with practice. You need real game simulation. And even though we couldn't have much contact today, we still were able to gain some ground with some areas we've had on hold for the last week to 10 days. Yeah, the first practice New Jersey's had since the season started.
When Golden State travels to the Staples Center tonight to take on the L.A. Lakers, the Warriors will be doing it without Stephen Curry, who re-injured his surgically repaired right ankle for the third time in Wednesday's loss at San Antonio. And there's a major issue that the Warriors face right now. Are they willing to shut Curry down for a couple of weeks to make sure this ankle heals fully and properly? But by doing that, they might give up any chance for a playoff spot. And there have been rumors swirling that Golden State's looking to make a big move, maybe a Dwight Howard kind of move, to put themselves very much in the playoff picture in that loaded Western Conference. So big questions for the Warriors as to their approach with this injury. One of the issues is that Curry has had problems with this ankle before, and if he plays, there is a potential that he's going to re-injure it even more severely and turn something that would be a couple of week absence into perhaps a season-long absence. So hard to know exactly what tack Golden State's going to play in this instance. Another injury for the Warriors worthy of note tonight, oft-injured center Andres Biedrins not likely to see the floor. That's going to give them six less fouls to give against the Pau Gasol-Andrew Bynum combo in the low post for L.A.
Top of the show, we talked about the Arizona State situation. Here's what happened. Three key cogs in their rotation were suspended for all we could get was this, quote, unacceptable conduct. We'll find a little bit more. Well, maybe we'll get it for you on Monday's show. Kiala King, their leading scorer, 13.7 points a game. Kyle Kane, 8.5 points a game, 6.5 rebounds. Also, Chris Colvin, the first guy off the bench, who had five starts this year, all out yesterday. So what happens? Well, naturally, with only six scholarship players, they go out and play their best game of the year, and they beat Southern Cal, and actually win the game relatively easily. Stepping up, Carrick Felix had 22 points. Trent Lockett played out of position over at point guard, 19 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists. That all looked pretty good. But now here's the issue going forward. Remember, as we said in Market Watch, Southern Cal had no ability to prepare for that lineup. They didn't even know till just before the game that those guys they'd watched on film all week weren't going to play. Different story now when Arizona State plays UCLA tomorrow. Those same three players are already declared out of Saturday's game, but now Ben Howland and the Bruins, they get a chance to look at a little bit of film, and the adrenaline wears off of those Arizona State players a little bit. Unlikely to see the same level of performance Saturday that we saw last night from the Sun Devils.
When we come back, it's time to go to the hardwoods as Money Time begins.
Let me know when I'm live. Hi, everybody. This is Bridget Magnus of Getting Real Estate in Vegas, and you are watching the Vegas Video Network.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Okay, guys, it's money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's go to Orlando, tonight's TV matchup between the Bulls and the Magic. And here's a Chicago team, 4-1 on the road already. They got wins at the Lakers and at the Clippers. Orlando, quality of competition, not so tough just yet, Dave. Has it been?
No, kind of a surprise to see Orlando as the favorite here. But again, it shows this old issue of reputation versus reality. Orlando was an average team the second half of last season after they made all those personnel changes. They're an average team right now. The markets just don't know they yet. They opened against Oklahoma City, a playoff contender, weren't really that competitive in the game that they weren't close to winning. Since then, they played five pieces of garbage, none of which are heading to the playoffs. They managed to win four of those games. But let's look at how interesting their numbers are despite the schedule. Now, when we do the early strength of schedule, not a lot to go with so far, but we get them number 29 out of number 30. Only Boston has played a weaker set. Look at the numbers against those weak teams. The Orlando defense, number 8 in the NBA. Last 2 years, they were number 2 and number 3. Orlando rebounding, number 13. The last 2 years, number 2 and number 4. It means they've significantly fallen off in their two key categories despite playing really weak competition. It's possible that Orlando may be a basket or more off of where the market has them priced right now.
And the other thing that the Magic are going to find, particularly early in the season, they haven't faced these tough end-game situations yet, and I'm not sure what they're going to do when they do face those situations. Obviously, Dwight Howard continuing to struggle at the free-throw line. He's not an ideal option to get a bucket late in a ballgame. And their perimeter shooters, well, spotty at best. Ryan Anderson enjoying a monster offensive season. He's not much of a rebounder. He's not much of a defender. And, of course, that lack of end-game experience. Again, we're only a couple weeks into the campaign. This isn't a huge deal yet. But the fact that the Magic haven't played these tight games and haven't won these tight games, whereas we saw Chicago win the tight game against the Lakers where they rallied from behind in the fourth quarter. We saw it when they knocked off Memphis the other night, a game where they looked awful offensively for three quarters and then stepped it up in the fourth with Derrick Rose playing a remarkable end game in that contest. He's one of the best finishers in the league. That's definitely one area that the Magic may come up a little bit short for a couple of weeks at least, until they get a bit more opportunity to play some of these contests.
If you leave your television tuned to ESPN after that one's over, they're going to take you to Portland at Phoenix. Right now they're visiting Trailblazers, a 2.5-point favorite. If you've been watching this show from day one, you know that we both like the Trailblazers an awful lot. Play of the day yesterday against the Lakers, solid performance by them. This might be the acid test tonight for Portland, even though they're stepping way down in class. Difficult setting. It's 4 games in 5 nights, all with court changes. And look at those first three opponents. Difficult, difficult competition. They could be a little bit fatigued. The big question we have about Portland this season, we'll be watching closely tonight to see if we could find that answer. Who backs up Raymond Felton? Felton is having a dynamite season for Portland. Last night, 10 assists, only one turnover. He's setting that tempo and rhythm that's allowing all of these other players to fit into their roles so well. But now look at those minutes. 40 minutes and 57 seconds last night. That's very, very high for the first night of a back-to-back. The other two previous games in this 4-5 cycle, 36-12, 37-47. He's logging more minutes than any starting point guard in the NBA. They don't really have a backup. Jordan Crawford or Jamal Crawford is going to run the point a little bit when he's in the game. That's not really his role. He's really more of a number two guy than a number one. If I'm Portland, and if I think I'm this close to a championship, by the way, we got a forum guy who asked a question. I've got Portland at 33-1. How deep do you go into the season before you hedge? If you've got a 33-1 to win the title, you may never have to hedge that. But if you're Portland, you think, you know what, this works. We're beating good teams. We better go sign a backup point guard right now.
Yeah, they could probably use Greg Oden, too. But who knows if and when he'll step foot on an NBA court again. But Oden was re-signed with Portland and is out indefinitely. But they would certainly use his interior defense and muscle, although they've been rebounding the ball very well so far. Number 5 in the NBA in rebounding margin. That compares to number 26 for Phoenix. And Phoenix has the big bodies this year. You know, there have been recent additions of the Suns that didn't have the capacity to win rebounding battle. this year's Suns team does with Marcin Gortat. Of course, they got Lopez down low. They have Fry down low. They've got guys who can battle for boards. They just haven't been getting the job done early on. Here's a quote from Alvin Gentry that speaks volumes about some of Phoenix's early season struggles. Quote, I'm frustrated in that I think we're much better than we're playing. I don't think I'm asking anyone to do anything we're not capable of doing. If you give up 20 offensive rebounds, as they did in their last game, that's 20 times you don't get to run. And, of course, the Suns, who have always been, in every recent edition, been one of the fastest-paced teams in the NBA, they're number 23 in the pace ratings right now, one of the slowest teams in the league, in large part because they've been getting crushed on the offensive glass and haven't had the opportunities to step up the pace.
So here's something to watch for tonight. Notice at the end of that quote, Gentry talks about not being able to run because you're not getting the ball off the glass. They still want to run. They don't want to be playing at number 23. They would still like to push the pace when they can. So this number 23 has a chance to get better. Maybe we find a little bit of value in Phoenix totals because there might be a market overreaction. And if you think the Trailblazers are a little bit tired or fatigued, you certainly do want to get out and run tonight. Accentuate that fact that they may be a little tired. Here's the problem. Portland's been killing people on the boards. Phoenix has it. This is the number 5 rebounding team against the number 26. That's the conundrum that makes it difficult to project whether Phoenix can get their tempo. But don't be surprised if the Suns, given the opportunity, run tonight.
Let's go to Saturday in Boulder, Colorado, an interesting college game to discuss. And that projected line has the Buffaloes about an 8-point favorite over the Cougs on Saturday. And this is a situation where the new conference alignments, and we're going to see a lot of this over the course of the next couple of years, but the new conference alignments are going to affect college basketball in a fairly unique way. Washington State, for the first time, playing that Utah-Colorado cycle where they have to deal with altitude on multiple games.
Here's the way we break it down. We consider anything over 4,000 feet to be significant in terms of the way teams play. And if you've ever just played golf at altitude, you know how things are a little bit different. You breathe a little differently. It takes a little more out of you. This is one of the toughest legs in all of college basketball. And again, it's going to be new for all of these Pac-12 teams the first time through. Salt Lake City, where Washington State played last night, about 43-20 at courtside. Boulder, where they've got to play tomorrow, 53-45 above sea level at courtside. So a couple things happen here. One is it's tough coming down off the Thursday game, accentuated by the fact that Washington State went into overtime against Utah, which is kind of hard to do.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah, that was embarrassing. Utah only used 7 players, just gutted a win out. Washington State played terribly. Now, a couple things come into play. We'll say, yeah, naturally, the second game in Boulder, you could be a little bit fatigued. But it starts in practice today. If you're a little bit fatigued and you don't practice as well as you ordinarily would, it's difficult to prepare for a team you haven't played before. And that's one of the difficulties when you have new conference opponents, first time against the coach, first time against their playbooks. But now, let's see if Washington State can hold up tomorrow. Also note that it's an afternoon start, not a night start. There's even less recuperation time. Colorado looked very fresh in the second half, running Washington out last night. No player went more than 32 minutes. Colorado may come out and aggressively try to push the pace and take advantage of that edge against Washington State.
Yeah, when you lose against Utah, you're clearly doing something very, very wrong. And a lot of that had to do with the Washington State's defensive effort last night. They only forced 9 turnovers against a team, again, only 7 players in the rotation for the Utes right now. So they didn't wear him down at all defensively. And they allowed 22 of 35 shooting on 2-point shots in that ballgame, which means the Utes were consistently getting good look. Now playing against an up-tempo team with little time to prepare and little rest, don't know if that bodes well for the Washington Cougars' chances. Look for these changing styles to be an issue when the team, and you'll see it all throughout college basketball, where they play these weekend road trips, play Wednesday, Saturday, or Thursday, Saturday, or Thursday, Sunday, whatever it is, in these 2 games in 3-day cycles on the highway, a change of pace, a change of style can be a much bigger issue for the road team than it is for the home squad.
So if you find Colorado at the right price tomorrow, you want to put a little bit of that in your pocket, but here's where you go with your pockets tonight. Let's go back to Orlando. Let's take Chicago plus that 1 as the play of the day against the Magic. We like what the Bulls can do at crunch time with their defensive adjustments, with Derrick Rose taking over. We don't like Orlando at all at crunch time of a close game. And one of the things, as you will get from us over the course of the season, When Tom Thibodeau has a day to prepare to put his defensive game plan together, excellent spots to be on the Bulls. Chicago plus one, the play of the day for Friday hardwoods.
When we come back, we're going to break down the weekend college football bowls right here on Vegas Sports Day.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's go to Saturday in Birmingham, where the Pitt Panthers and the SMU Mustangs are battling in one of the least anticipated bowl games this year, but a bowl game nonetheless. And since we've broken down every previous bowl game this entire bowl season on Vegas Sports Day, we're going to do it again today. Right now, Pitt Panthers about -3.5, total of 47. And this is a battle of the two teams whose coaches were recruited by Arizona State. SMU kept their coach. Pitt's coach, he said bye-bye, made the move down to the desert.
You folks at Arizona State probably already have buyer's remorse, of course, with Todd Graham. Pitt players were able to talk to the media on Tuesday for the first time since Graham left for Arizona State. Now, if you remember back from some Insider Six-Pack segments at the time, we talked about how awkward that transition was. Players finding out by text message that the coach had left, despite promises that he had made to come back and talk to them first before he had made a decision. So when the Pitt kids finally had a chance to open up, what did they do? They opened up. Now, we're only going to use a few of these quotes. There were a couple of interesting little rants out there. We'll start with Max Gruder. That was one of the lowest things I've seen a head coach do, especially with him promising us 4 days before that he was staying for at least 5 years. It was a pretty despicable thing to do, in my opinion. Let's go to Chris Alexic. I don't think we're completely over it, to be honest with you. There is still a lot of anger with the way he left and how he said in his press conference that he was going to come back and say what was up to us. Why would you say that if you weren't going to do it? Those Pitt players harboring a lot of anger because Graham left. So at first we thought, boy, this could be very awkward, because not only did Graham leave, but the interim coach, defensive coordinator Keith Patterson, one of Graham's best friends. And it was considered to be only a matter of time until he followed Graham along and became the Arizona State defensive coordinator. That didn't happen. Instead of following Graham along, he's going to Arkansas State. He'll be the defensive coordinator for Gus Malzahn. So this little plot twist might actually impact the whole attitude of the Pitt team in an interesting way.
Oh, no question, Dave. I mean, look at the, let me continue with some of these quotes, because they're definitely relevant here when it talks about how the team is reacting to Patterson coaching in this interim role. Quote, this one's from Gruder, Max Gruder again. Coach Patterson's goal is to finish the season right, and that's what we're going to try to do. There have been some pretty crappy things that have gone on here. But here's one from Alexis. Coach Patterson has been an honest guy from day one, and we want to play our best for him. Banding together is going to be a big thing, so we can come together through all this adversity and win a ball game. Of course, Pitt not only has to win here, they have to win by margin, but the fact that SMU still playing without their heart and soul. You know, we talked a little bit about Colin Klein, Kansas State's quarterback, as being as impactful as any player in college football this year, as important to his team, even though he wasn't on the dais for the Heisman Trophy presentation. And Zach Lyon, SMU's star running back slash fullback, monster season, as good as any running back in the country. Without him, they haven't been the same. SMU hasn't been particularly strong at stepping up in class. Worth noting here, a little pace issue. Pitt's offensive coordinator for this ballgame, Todd Dodge of dodgeball fame. He coached at North Texas and tried to turn them into an up-tempo offense. Didn't work out very well. Dodge is known as an up-tempo guy, but for the purposes of this game, doesn't look as if the Panthers are going to be running a ton of no huddle.
Let's go to Sunday night in Mobile, Alabama. Nice matchup between MAC and Sun Belt teams. Arkansas State, 1.5-point favorite over Northern Illinois. Total of 65. Here we go with the coaching issues again. Hugh Freeze left Arkansas State to become the head coach at Mississippi. He took a lot of his assistants with him. Now, there's a good attitude at Arkansas State because they love Gus Malzahn, the guy who's going to come in and take over the program, going back to his home state. They like Patterson coming in to be the defensive coordinator. There's a positive there that we think will lead to a good attitude from the players. But what about the preparation? Their coaching staff was so gutted that here's what they had to do. David Gunn was the interim coach for this bowl game. He had to bring in Kenny Ingram, who had been fired as the Memphis defensive coordinator, to come and help out with practices in early December. Ingram, a former Arkansas State player back in the 90s. And also, Billy Dawson, the head coach of Nashville High, that's Nashville, Arkansas High School, has come in to help coach the offense. So here are two coaches who come in December who don't really know the players, don't know the playbooks that well, coming in to help you sort of patch things together. We're not sure how good that preparation's been. We know the attitude has been pretty good. They like Malzahn. They've had a great season. They think things are going forward. We know they're a good team. Does that preparation issue preclude them from playing well? Or is the fact that you know your own playbook so well mean that you don't need that much coaching for a bowl game?
Yeah, Arkansas State, without a question, was the class of the Sun Belt this year. They were better than Louisiana Lafayette, a team that went on to win their bowl game behind a whole burst of emotion. And they were better than a Florida International squad that lost in their bowl appearance. Three Sun Belt teams making it to bowls this year. And a great quarterback matchup in this ball game. We have Ryan Applin for the Red Wolves. Throws for 3,235 yards. Rushes for 605 more with 9 touchdowns. Chandler Harnish for the Northern Illinois Huskies was phenomenal. I mean, he got a fair bit of TV time. You probably had a chance to see him during the regular season. Another dual threat QB. He threw for more than 2,900. He ran for more than 1,300 yards, 11 touchdowns. He was number 13 in pass efficiency in the nation this year, and number 1 among quarterbacks for rushing, number 3 behind Robert Griffin and Case Keenum in total offense. That's pretty impressive for any single call, let alone one from the MAC conference. But there is a differential between these two teams' defensive numbers. Northern Illinois, we cashed a fair few over tickets on the Huskies this year. In large part, their offense was good. Their defense couldn't stop anyone. Number 89 total, number 89 in scoring, number 83 in pass efficiency, number 56 in sacks. Compare that to what we saw from Arkansas State. Admittedly, against some weaker Sun Belt offenses, but still, Arkansas State, number 20 in total defense, number 14 in scoring D, number 18 in pass efficiency, and number 18 in sacks. Defensive class difference between these two squads.
You see that class difference comes from two elements, speed and experience. Arkansas State had much more. Northern Illinois started a very young group this year. They got a little better as the season went on. They didn't get a whole lot better. We like the overall Arkansas State team speed. And a couple little under-the-radar injuries in that Northern Illinois defensive front. Two kids that we've been told will be out. Ron Newcomb, a senior starter inside, and Sean Progar, only a junior, but already with 34 career starts. Those are two couple of key cogs to have out against a team that brings the balance Arkansas State has. They have a little Arkansas State in our pocket, despite the coaching issues, like the team speed aspects of them against a slower opponent from the Mid-American Conference.
When we come back, it's time to talk playoffs. Playoffs, yeah! We're going to break down the Sunday playoff matchups right here as Money Time continues.
I'm Courtney Leone. This is Vegas Video Network. You want me to mention awkward silence? Let's do that then, okay. Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good? Better?
Let's go to the Meadowlands in New Jersey, where right now we're looking at the New York Giants. About a 3-point favorite. Should be getting them at 3 even money. I saw a couple of 2.5s pop up on my live odds screen this morning, but primarily 3s out there. Total 47.5 as the Giants and Falcons square off. And there was a big difference in terms of class between these two teams down the stretch. The Falcons won their last 6 games against non-playoff foes when they played a playoff team down the stretch, 0-3 straight up. They did not perform well in those ball games. For the Giants, I mean, we know what a brutal schedule they had down the stretch. They face New England, San Francisco, New Orleans, Green Bay, all after the bye. Two late games with playoff implications against Dallas. They played the Eagles when Philly was hot. They played the Jets in this must-win playoff game. Giants are certainly more battle-tested than Atlanta when we talk about recent results.
So now it comes down to matchups, and this is where this game could be awfully interesting. The Giant defensive front got healthy as the season went on. The last two games, 11 sacks and 13 additional quarterback hits. That's real good. And those were games that mattered against the Jets and against the Cowboys with their playoff lives on the line. But what did Atlanta do down the stretch they were so successful with? A lot of no huddle, speeding the tempo up because they've got the personnel to do it. Look at these weapons. You got Michael Turner ran for 1,340 yards, 4.5 yards a carry, 11 touchdowns. Roddy White caught 100 passes this year, good for almost 1,300 yards and 8 touchdowns. Tony Gonzalez over the middle, 80 catches, 875 yards, 7 touchdowns. What opened the door for those two to catch 180 passes? The reason Atlanta traded up to draft Julio Jones back in the spring. Jones' impact, 54 catches at 959 yards, the yards per catch among the best in the NFL, also 8 touchdowns. So does Atlanta actually come out, instead of the old conservative approach we used to see under Mike Smith the first couple of years, do they come out aggressively against the Giants and say, you know what, if you think you're going to beat us with pass rush, we're going to go no huddle right from the very start, we're going to spread the field, we're going to try some quick hitters. We could see that little bit of a difference in tempo. The other conundrum here that we've got to figure out before our own money gets in play, that strength of schedule aspect, it toughens the Giants up, or does it weaken them a little bit and make them just a little fatigued? They've had to go through a grinder. Could Atlanta possibly be the fresher team? We know the one thing that the Giants had hoped to have as an advantage they didn't get, it's going to be a nice day in the Meadowlands. Mild, not a lot of wind, temperature in the mid-40s. They would have liked something a little differently for a team that's been playing a lot of games in domes lately.
Yeah, who's a better quarterback? You know, Eli Manning versus Matt Ryan. My money's on Manning. Manning had if he played on a team that was healthy all year, he would have been an MVP consideration. He would have been putting up monster numbers. Eli Manning was a difference maker for the Giants and a big difference maker in the fourth quarter of close games, time and time again, rallying the Giants from deficits. I cashed my under 9.5 win bets on the Giants, but it was a sweat. I didn't think it would be that tough, but a lot of that had to do with the injuries. The Giants, at various times this year, had injuries at wide receiver. They had injuries on the defensive line. They had injuries in the secondary. They had injuries at running back. Well, they're as healthy now as they've been at any time since August. So they're getting healthy. They have the better quarterback. And, you know, we look at upside. Which of these two teams is capable of making a playoff run right here? Well, this is a Giants team that won 3 times on the road to make the Super Bowl just a couple years ago. Not that long ago. The coaching staff's still there. Many of the key players from that team are still there. They know what it takes to win in the month of January. And here's an Atlanta team. Well, they had home field advantage throughout the playoffs last year. What'd they do? Lost in the first round. No recent history of playoff success for the Falcons. The Giants may have an edge in that department.
Let's go to later Sunday afternoon in Denver. The Steelers now an 8.5-point favorite. Total 33. The 33 starting the show this morning as the weather forecast gets out there. Talking about maybe 2 to 3 inches of snow early on Sunday. Not projecting snow during the game right now. Possibly snow early on Sunday. Cold. Not all that windy, though. We think that maybe the markets are making a bit of an overreaction. These are two teams that are actually built to play pretty well under adverse conditions. Question is, who can step up and play well? Steelers have injury problems on both sides of the ball. Rashard Mendenhall, the top runner, won't play. Ryan Clark, starting safety, leading tackler, he won't play. But now a late curveball coming in this week. Marquise Pouncey, who played hurt last week in a game that they needed at Cleveland, didn't come out of the game feeling all that good. Missed practice yesterday. They're not sure they're going to have Pouncey. Pouncey is a difference maker in that Steeler offensive line.
Yeah, we talked at the start of the show about injuries that matter to a point spread versus injury that don't. Pouncey's worth a field goal. Maybe two. Maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit. He's worth a couple of points to Pittsburgh. And obviously, when a starting offensive lineman gets hurt, doesn't affect the number at all. You won't see. For a playoff game, the betting markets won't even notice such a thing. Savvy bettors will. That's one injury you want to pay attention to on Sunday morning when we find out if he's going to be able to go or not. We talked yesterday on the show about the success that home underdogs have had in this round of the playoffs, the wild card round, 12-4 against the number. This is over an extended sample size. We saw last year Seattle in the same home dog role against mighty New Orleans. What happened? Seattle knocked off the defending Super Bowl champs week number one. And historically, in the modern era, you know, we saw it when Buffalo went to all those Super Bowls and kept on losing. We haven't seen it since. Teams that go to the Super Bowl one year, come up short, they don't tend to have extended playoff runs the following year. And that could be an issue with Pittsburgh moving forward, particularly in this point spread range. But you talk about the offensive line injuries for the Steelers. What about Redmond? You know, Isaac Redmond came in last week, and the Steelers needed him. They were relying on him to grind out that win against Cleveland. He didn't fumble once. He fumbled twice, lost both fumbles in the fourth quarter. As Pittsburgh's trying to hang on for the win, how much the coaching staff going to trust Redmond this time around? Big issues for the Steelers, and particularly when we talk about the Clark absence here. Clark matters against an option offense, against a Tim Tebow-led offense. He's the team's leading tackler. Impact injuries for Pittsburgh, both sides of the football.
I had a good email question asking about using margins that teams win or lose by as particular factors. I know it doesn't get talked about all that much. Pittsburgh won one road game all year by more than this point spread. That's back when the Steelers were healthier. Something also comes into play when the line is high and the total's low. Little side exercise you could do for every game on the NFL board. If you got time, do it for the colleges as well. We call it degree of dominance. At 8.5, when the total's 33, they're saying a kill. You know, when you look at what they're projecting Pittsburgh to score, they're saying, you know, 20.5 to 12, 21 to 12.5, around in that range. That is a very, very high degree of dominance. Take that ratio that they're calling. That's a much higher degree of dominance than New Orleans-Detroit, even though New Orleans is a bigger favorite on Saturday night. Does Pittsburgh have the tools to carry that high of a degree of dominance? It doesn't look like it right now. So several different elements come into play where we think there may be some value. You look at Denver, plus those points to be competitive in the game, but there's something else that comes into play too that we're going to be able to have some fun with. And Teddy will be able to take it home, but we'll start to set it up a little bit. We like to play over totals when they drop under that 34 barrier. And if all you did, go back and check the NFL the last 20 years, just play every 33 over that's been out there, you win. Because that's that break point where the markets have gone too far. Now, it's never going to look good from a handicapping standpoint. Say, well, gee, these defenses are good, the offenses are struggling, where do the points come from? Sometimes bad offense creates points. What happens when you can't move the ball? You punt a lot. What happens when you can't establish the run? You get third down and 12 a lot. What happens when you get a lot of punts? The potential for big plays from the special teams. What happens on third down and 12s? A higher potential for turnovers. Good defenses, when they're controlling a game, put the offenses in very bad positions, and offenses in bad positions make mistakes. So that's why when the line gets a little bit too low, sometimes you can find some sneaky value. If you get one bounce, one score from the defenses or special teams, now the total's only 26. That's not asking for a whole lot, is it?
It sure isn't, Dave, because we are going to go with the Steelers and Broncos over the total, 33, and you're in no rush to bet this. If it's snowing on Sunday morning, this total is going to continue to drop. 33 is a good number, but again, as long as it's below 34, if you lose a hook the one way to 34, to 33.5, probably not going to kill you. But if you start seeing the market go in the other direction, you have a chance here you might even see a 32, and that's a key number when it comes to NFL total. So let's take that Steelers-Broncos over as the Vegas Sports Day play of the day. And that's going to wrap it up for the weekend preview edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Walensky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll see you on Monday.